The purpose of spotting is, and I'm going to break my rule about using negatives. The purpose of spotting is not to catch somebody. Purpose of spotting is to make sure that they have a controlled descent, particularly where between the top of the head and below the shoulders. We want to make sure that that part of the body does not impact in a hard way. And what we do when we're spotting is we get a strong stance, like a boxer stance. And this is where a team exercise, a pairwise exercise works best, is to get in that spotting stance and take turns trying to push the other person over. That helps gain the feeling of keeping knees flexible and the upper body strong and prepared to get buffeted in a way. And also the hands, position of the hands should be shoulder high and between you and the direction of the force that will come. Keep the thumbs tucked to the side of the hand and the hands, fingers straight and together, cupped ever so much like a spoon. Because that's what we want to do is to ensure that our fingers are a solid unit. If they're spread out, the fingers can get bent, and if they get bent, they're going to get bent backwards. For those of you who've been or have taken wilderness first aid, you perhaps remember the phrase, don't create a second victim. Same sort of thing applies here. Now, the question might be, when do you use spotters? I refer to on page 47. There are a few low course elements that benefit from spotting. The Wild Woozy, and that's got a different type of spotting. The Mohawk Walk, where we're walking across the wires from pole to pole. That benefits from spotting because new people might have a tendency to rush or be nervous. And those wires, when they're really, really tight, can cause damage to your clothing and to your skin if you fall on them. The up and over, also called the beam, definitely want spotters there. When you start the game, one of the rules often is allow members of the group to spot, and as soon as two people have come across, they will spot, and the original spotters go to the other side. When climbing, if a climber is say about 150, 180 or pounds or heavier, we definitely want to have people spotting before they're about waist high, because you can have the rope as tight as possible. You can have taken up all the slack, and there's still going to be enough stretch in that rope to let a person fall about 3 feet. And we want to make sure that when a participant slips and falls, that they stretch the rope enough to stop falling before they hit the ground. I'm sorry, before they touch the ground. On page 48, there's a reference to the ABCD method when spotting. Really, it's a good acronym. But hopefully everyone will do it without needing to rely on an acronym. When you're spotting, your attention is on the participant who's being spotted. We want to focus on our attention on them. Our conversation, everything should be focused on that person who's being spotted for multiple reasons, of course. A big reason being so that that participant feels secured. You're spotting them because they're in a position of possible danger. And they need to be confident that you're watching, that you're taking care of them. So our attitude, body position, as mentioned before, we have our feet in a strong stance. We're upper body positioned to be able to resist an impact, and hands shoulder high, fingers together, cupped. Now the C part, communication. The climber first makes sure that the spotters are ready. So what they would do is they would ask, "Spotters ready?" The spotters, as a group, respond with "ready." Something very, very simple. Tell you what, well, we'll try that out at the course. Once the spotters are ready, then the climber states that they're climbing, and the spotters then respond with "climb on," and do this all as a group. If the participant feels nervous or uncertain or feeling that maybe they're not ready, it's perfectly fine to repeat the command. And the spotter should be fully focused on what they're doing and be able to respond as a group. It's also while the climber is climbing, they need to communicate what they're about to do. And also, when you're not climbing but you're in a trust element, then instead of saying climbing, you would say falling. And the spotters then should respond with "fall on." Any questions about that? All right. So let's move on and then talk about trust activities on page 144. You might think that we're taking this out of order, but what this is basically we're following this pretty much in the order that we would do a COPE session. Now, on page 144, chapter 19, it has a nice definition of trust. And basically, it's I'm about to do something, and I am confident I know what your response is going to be. A nice thing I like about that definition, trust, is that last little bit, that trust is a two-way street. In order to have trust, someone must trust in someone who is trustworthy. If you're spotting someone who's a participant in a trust exercise and they are moving their feet, they're bending their knees, they're clearly uncomfortable, that person is not yet trusting. So what you would do as a facilitator, if you saw this, is go to another trust game, something that's less stressful perhaps, or play another game that works on communication, coordination, and team building, and then come back to the trust game later. Now, I'd like you to take a look on page 145 about the participant posture. That is actually easier to do than one might think from looking at the pictures. Basically, you put out one hand, crossing your body, palm pointed to the side of the arm that it came from, and then the other arm outstretched, crossing the first arm, palms facing each other, and then while you're holding your fingers, while you're clasping your hands together, just bring that clasped hand up to your chest and hold it there. Now, hopefully everybody's had a chance to try that. It can be kind of awkward, but the important thing is that you've got your hands in a way where they'll be unlikely to disconnect or go apart in the event that you start to fall. They'll be more likely to get held in closer. The important thing is if you're falling and your hands are flailing, chances are your fingers are outstretched, and fingers have a tendency to hit sensitive parts of the body like the face, nose, eyes, and so forth. Now, if we look at, let's look at on 146 where it talks about the trust duo and also the trust trio. Those are games that you could play as groups, and they're kind of fun games. Good ones to practice if you're, while you're becoming a facilitator. If you see people joking and laughing around, well, how do you control that? Remind them that what the purpose of this is, building trust. This is a serious type of activity. They can have, it's okay to have fun with it, but the key part is to make sure that we're trusting each other. And hopefully many of you have seen the video of someone, a number of people talking about practicing a trust fall, and they forget to say fall back. And the person who's got their eyes closed, who's the participant, falls forward. That's not what we want to have happen. So take a look at the games. If you ever have any questions about it, please let me know. One thing I would like you to do, those of you who've got the Blay manual on, look at page 147 at the Cookie Factory and talk and tell me what would might you do differently. Now, one of the things I mentioned last time is with a trust fall, it's important that the participant stay safe, as well as the participants are in a position where they're not going to get hit or impacted, particularly their chins. So does anyone want to take a shot at Cookie Factory? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Does it have something to do with the participant's hands out in front?
Now that you mention it, Larry, I hadn't noticed that before, but I do notice the two people in the front, particularly one, who is got their arm bent and palm up. That doesn't look like it's a strong position. What I'm also thinking is, that participant is coming in, and those faces are rather close to that line of entry. But
so what I'm hearing you say is the catcher should stand back with their arms straight, or not straight, but slightly bent at the elbows, palms up.
Yes. And they're leaning in, which will have a tendency to get leaned in even further.
And their momentum is going forward, and when the participant falls on those hands, it makes that forward momentum even stronger.
I think so. So to me, it looks like there's the possibility of the participants who are facing each other might get much closer very quickly. But trust circle is one that we play. The other name for that is Will-O-In-The-Wind. Where, and you'll notice on page 148, where the participant, the willow, has got their eyes closed. Now, here's another question. There are some things very, very wrong about that picture. What did we say about the position of hands? Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say about the position of hands and how they're to be formed?
Yeah, the thumbs are away from the rest of the hands.
Yep. And the boy that's on the leftmost side, you'll notice his fingers are outspread.
Right.
That's very spoons, not forks.
And I would intersperse the taller and stronger and possibly heavier set kids between the skinnier, shorter, thinner kids.
Hey, Chuck, thank you very much for bringing that up. I forgot that because when I was at National Camp School the first time, someone said that or brought that up. I said, well, shouldn't we make sure that people are alternating? And they said, it's a good idea, but what's better is for the facilitator to be positioned in such a way where if the if a smaller person could be put in harm's way, that they have a backup. But because if you, well, that also depends upon your group. If your group has body style sensitivities, then mentioning, hey, we want the heavier guys in between the lighter guys, that can go the wrong way. But just be very sensitive.
Between the skinnier ones.
Watch the terms. And also, hopefully by this time, the trust games come later in the program. They're not something you do right away. You want to play other games to get a sense of how people are become self-aware. And even sometimes leave it up to the group as to, you know, we are here to make sure everything is, we do this safely. How can we make sure that we do this in a safe manner? And even give hints as to perhaps we want to reposition ourselves and so forth. Now, a rule that when I do a trust circle, I like to mention is that there should be two hands on the participant at all times. And also pass the person. Because I've noticed every time that someone had said, don't push the person to the other side, you know, about the third participant, they're playing ping pong with that poor person. So are there any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. 149. The blanket catch. That can sometimes be tricky because you're holding on to a blanket, and that's going to be a lot of friction. But if you're doing a trust fall element with a co-ed group that have rules about touching, that would be something that you might need to do. Any questions along those lines about trust falls? Chuck, James, you're on. You got any? Did I miss anything? Is there something else I should cover for that?
Sounds good.
Yeah, nothing on my part. One point, just to intersperse, if you've got a risk of the climbers falling on an area that's rocky and not sort of the typical prepared surface, crash pads are pretty typical for bouldering, for example. And generally speaking, it's not a good idea to be bouldering without them. So those are just big compressed foam pads, and you can get them from a lot of vendors. Just another suggestion.
Thanks, James.
If I know I'm going to be doing high elements, I always do some warm-ups first and then get everybody in helmets and harnesses before we start things like this. So although helmets are not required for a trust fall, golly, if you're going to put them on later in the day, why not put them on earlier in the day? And going over the wall, if there's any chance of having people in harnesses, it's much safer because you'll find everybody takes off their leather scout belts or their Philmont belts and tries to hook them together, use them as a rope. And if they're or somebody reach down and grab somebody's belt and pull it and tear the belt loops off their pants. But if they're already wearing a harness, by the time they get to the wall, that's, I think it's a much safer event.
Yep. Thanks, Chuck. I'd like to talk about dealing with